You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
From the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is this a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Oh, this is early.
When you hear that music, you know what time it is. You know what day it is? It's Friday. Time for a segment we called The Chef Says. Joining me from Grand Forks, North Dakota is Kim Holmes, my hetero life partner. Kim, how are you?
I am great, Matt. Nice to hear your voice. And hope everybody out there is having a good summer.
Yeah,
I sure am.
Well, it's
I have my brother and sister coming tomorrow. And got a menu planned for him that's going to rock him.
So your brother lives in Kentucky?
Louisville, Kentucky, yes.
And your sister lives in Maryland?
Just outside of Annapolis, Maryland.
There you go.
It's called Severna Park.
Severna Park. Named after the
Severn River.
River. There you have it. That runs right by the United States Naval Academy. So most of us are familiar with that. Let me ask you a question. Your name came up when my son Patrick was here over the past weekend. And so Susan was not pleased with steak in the bag. Okay. And specifically.
Why?
Well, I'm going to tell you why. I did not get the meat thermometer out. Okay. So whether you use top sirloin or London broil, they're both they're tougher cuts of meat, yes?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So here's the question. Let's just say you bought different cuts of meat. Let's just say you bought, like, instead of, you know, one long piece of, you know, tenderloin.
Yes.
What if you bought three, you know, 1-inch ribeye steaks and laid them, like, next to each other and then did the crust on top of that? Do you think it would be a better meal? Is there a particular reason other than the geometry of the meat lends itself to, you know, to putting some form of crust on it? And so I said I would ask you, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if the ribeye was thick enough, you could do it and it would work really well. Now, I'm talking about a big sucker, like about 2 inches thick. And
the recipe calls for... let's see, an inch and a quarter, whether it be, what are the cuts of beef? London
tenderloin, New York strip, prime ribeye, top sirloin.
Yeah, it's top sirloin and is one of them. And, but again, you're talking about a tougher cut of meat. So, you know, one of the things that you've taught me and I've learned is if you want to eat better, buy better beef if that's what you're eating. If you got, let's just say a ribeye steak or let's just say three of them and they were, you know, relatively large steaks and you got them cut, let's just say an inch and a quarter, would you, do you think that it would improve the meal? Would it detract from the meal? You've had it. How about if that stuff was laid on top of a ribeye? Would that be better?
I think you can't put three, end to end ribeyes.
No, they'd be a monster grocery bag. Right, they'd be side to side.
Okay, side to side.
Yes.
You could put it in a grocery bag, and then crimp the ends, and I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Okay.
But I wouldn't use a top sirloin. I would use either a filet mignon, you know, the tenderloin, which is what you did for me the first time, that was spectacular. And whenever you've always used that cut of meat, but I think side by side by side ribeye with the seasoning, the coating on it, I'd say an inch and a half is how I would cut it.
Inch and a half.
You want a little thicker than an inch and a quarter because you don't want it to cook too fast. You want it to have it medium rare in the center. So the thinner, the faster it would cook, the thinner the steak. So inch and a half would be probably ideal for what you're going to try to do. But what I would do first is for you and Colleen sometime, or if Catherine's over, you know, the three of you, one 2-inch ribeye to try it, or do two to try it, and then test drive them and see how they turn out with the thermometer in there. And then if it works, which I think it will,
right?
Then you can add a third one if you have more people. But using a ribeye would be much more flavorful than a tenderloin.
That's what I think. Yeah, if you put that, what is it called? Is there a name when you put like a crust on something, you know, like a breaded crust on top of a steak? Is there a generic name for it?
No, it's just I've had steaks that have a Parmesan crust on it, a filet mignon,
right,
but it's mixed with breadcrumbs.
Right. And there's no name for it, like bon fond la quarta. It's like there's no.
I'm sure, Mac, there is, but I'd have to look it up and get back to you on it.
All right. And because essentially you could do it with anything. All you're talking about.
Oh yeah, you sure can.
It's cheese and bread and some seasoning. That forms a crust on top of that's what steak in the bag is. And I will tell you what, I did not get the meat thermometer out, so it was my fault because, you know, once it's in the bag, you can't see it, right? So, you know.
No, you cannot.
You can't see anything. And so Susan did it on thickness and time, and it was probably done medium, which with that cut of beef, means you better have your molars in because you're going to be doing a little chewing.
Yes.
And so then we got to the discussion about the type of meat. And then I said, well, I will make sure to ask him. So the bottom line is we should probably do a little of an experiment, you know, maybe a filet, maybe a ribeye and have those and see what happens.
Yes. Well, you know, the filet is going to be good if you do a beef log,
right,
of, you know, a tenderloin. But I would try it with a nice inch and a half ribeye. I think that's going to be a hit.
And because of the marbling, right? The taste of the marbling
the fat tenderizes the meat as it cooks. And now I have a question for you. Would you put the seasoning, crust on the bottom too, all over the meat?
No.
That's what you did with the tenderloin, correct?
No. I don't think so.
Just on the top?
Just on the top.
Okay, I got it. That makes sense. I can see that.
Right.
Because if it was on the bottom, it would get soggy.
Right. So on the meat, you have the meat against the bag on the bottom. But again, the seasoning is on the other, the whole, there's like a pile of seasoning on top of the, and then when you get it in the bag, you know, you take what you have left over and you pile it up around, and then as it cooks, some of it will fall to the wayside. The rest of it stays on and it's on and around the meat.
Yes.
And let me tell you, and that's just as good with the meat drippings.
Hello.
With the cheese and the garlic and the bread. It's delicious. Absolutely delicious. So it's called Steak in the Bag. You can find that recipe, as a matter of fact, if you go to the website, and I think I have it up on, it's on either the read board or the blog. Let me see if it's there before I shoot my mouth off. Steak.
I thought you did.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them. now I got to go to older entries. There's all, the chef says, Wonders of the Green Egg Grill. And how much you pay for a great steak. Flank steak marinade from my mother. Chef Kim Holmes, great pot roast and unbelievable flank steak. Cooking steak outdoors. I thought I had the recipe for Steak in the Bag.
You better get it up. Because that's a real winner.
The chef says, ribeye or filet mignon? Favorite comfort food. It's got a great picture with a marinara sauce, chicken fried steak, and this week's pastrami swami sports pick. And there's a picture of you. Hey, there's a picture of you with an apron on and a fedora.
Oh Jesus! Well, I've been known to do stuff like that.
Oh my Lord. I don't see it. And so I will include with this podcast the recipe for Steak in a Bag. And you serve it with carrot casserole, and I know that recipe is on the website.
Yes.
And so world famous recipe.
The combination of that carrot casserole with the Steak in a Bag is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, hello. Certain things were meant to go together. Those two were meant to go together.
And that's one of them.
Yeah. And if you could,
for sure.
If you could swing the cherry pie on top of that, then you'll hit a complete home run, man.
You'll clear the bases.
Yeah,
you'll clear the
bases, as a matter of fact. So anyway, all right. Well, then we have some work to do, and then I will report back to you on what that tastes like. But I'm already kind of salivating a little bit because the ribeye steak with that kind of crust on it is bonbon. It's very, very good. Exactly. So that's exciting. So talk to us about the menu for your brother and sister. So what would a guy like you serve as brother and sister when they come to visit?
Okay. Tonight,
when
they come in, we pick them up this afternoon. I'll check them in their hotel and at the townhouse, which is about 2.5-3 blocks from our place. Give them a set of keys so they can hang out here whenever they want to come and go. And tonight we'll have Alaskan scallops, like 8 to 10 to a pound scallops. Big suckers. They're beautiful. And then I've been ordering from the Alaskan Seafood Company.
Right.
And then that we'll serve with some appetizers, I think some hummus and some boursin cheese, which you love, and then a little asparagus and a salad, and that's it for tonight. And then Saturday, tomorrow, I ordered 2-inch, 30-day-aged Black Angus porterhouses out of this guy in New Jersey, a company that supplies restaurants.
Now, explain the porterhouse, yeah, everybody, for those that aren't
steak. Porterhouse is like a big T-bone, but it's a little closer to the center of the rib, and it's got on one side is the New York strip, and on the other side, the smaller side, is a filet mignon. So you get two types of steak with one steak, and they weigh, I just got them in today. They just came in by UPS today. They weigh 33 to 36 ounces each. Yeah, they're big suckers, and it'll feed four of us.
Wow.
I'm serving with the scallops. I'll serve purple asparagus, and then the next night, Saturday night, we'll start out with a caprese salad that is fresh sliced tomatoes with fresh sliced mozzarella, a little red onions, and some olive oil and balsamic vinegar and cracked black pepper on top. And then we will serve the steaks with white asparagus. I mean, that's white. It's just white, like a sheet of paper. And they're both very tender and different, and they happen to be in season around here. So, we have some gelato that I bought at the public market from a local couple, makes their own gelato and sells it on the Saturday market at the town square. And then Sunday, we're going to have Copper River salmon.
Ooh.
We'll serve some, I don't know, I think we'll just serve a big salad with them, with the salmon. And it'll be a little lighter because Sunday morning we're going to have fresh bagels with smoked salmon, cream cheese, our boursin cream cheese, thinly sliced red onions, and capers. That'll be our breakfast. So that'll fill us up for most of the day.
And they fly out Sunday afternoon?
No. Then Monday morning, we're hopping in the car. We're going to drive to Walker. And we have another hotel for two nights. And we're going to hang out with Bob Evenson. His whole family is in town starting today. His girlfriend flew in from California last week. So we'll just stop over and visit. We're not going to have any meals with them, but we'll just hang out and have a couple of cocktails, adult beverages, and enjoy the beautiful weather around here. I can't believe how nice it's been, Mac.
Really?
Yeah, it's been in the high 70s, lower 80s all week for the next week.
That's my favorite.
A little scattered thunder showers, but that doesn't mean anything around here. You know, it's either hit or miss with those suckers. And then Wednesday, we drive back, and they leave Thursday. And so we have a week of partying ahead of me.
All right, let me ask you some questions.
Yes.
Number one, how do you prepare your scallops? Because I'm not a big scallop guy because I don't. To me, they don't have a whole lot of taste in them.
Well, you can do them a couple of ways. You can use a pesto sauce on them. But what we do is we just very simple olive oil, black pepper, and salt. And then we turn the skillet up real high, and they only take about 3 minutes to cook. And so you have to be on top of it. Everything has to be done, that you're going to do to have with your scallops. Use soy sauce or lemon, lime with it. It's your call. It's whatever sauce you have, but you don't want to over season it because they're a delicate fish, and so. But the key to scallops is not to overcook them, because you might as well eat a golf ball. if they get white, solid white all the way through, then they'll start to get hard and tough. And so, like an overcooked steak, you'll be chewing on it. So the best thing to do is stand over them. You have all your seafood, like we always teach everyone. Everything's at room temperature. Because you want it to sear, and scallops are very delicate, so you want to sear them completely on both sides, about a minute and a half. Depends on the size, maybe 2 minutes a side, but that's it. And then you don't need to let those rest. You just dive in. And scallops also goes great in linguine or spaghetti, like carbonara. You know, that's a cream sauce with cheese, Parmesan, and thicken that. You saute a little garlic, you throw your cream in, and then when that bubbles up and starts to reduce, then you throw your Parmesan in, and your Parmesan will act as a thickening agent. And then you throw your fresh pasta in there and toss it, and a little parsley, and then you put your scallops right on top of that. And that's also very, very good. So,
all right, next question.
Yeah.
Purple zucchini, what is that? And what's
purple
it?
Asparagus.
Purple asparagus. And yeah. No, you said it. I screwed it up. Purple asparagus, what is it and what's the difference?
Well, it's purple, and when you cook it, it kind of turns green. it's just a strain of asparagus that tastes pretty much the same. A little bit more earthy than that. That's about it. Now, I cook mine. I will have mine in this instance with the scallops. I will flash boil them in water, and then I take them out of the water, and then I put them in an ice bath to stop the cooking. And to keep their color and their firmness so they don't overcook. Because if you overcook asparagus, you know, it's like a limp, you know what.
Right.
And then I like to dress it with olive oil, black pepper, and a little Parmesan. And there you have it. That's it.
All right. So.
Yeah. And now with the steak, I'm going to cook white asparagus. And what I'm going to do with those is I have a little device that's, it looks like a silver tray. It's stainless. And it's got these little holes in the bottom. And a little handles on each end. And it's a rectangular about, oh, I'd say 12, 14 inches by about 10 inches. And I will toss the raw asparagus in olive oil, a little salt, and a lot of black pepper, because that's how I roll. And then I lay them out on that, and when the steak has been flipped and when it's resting, then I will take that little tray and put it on the grill directly on the high heat and stand over it with my spatula, because the steak is covered in foil on the cutting board. And that will take about, I don't know, three, four minutes max to cook. But you have to take the side of your spatula and kind of turn them. You know what I mean? Roll them like a log. Just roll them a little bit so all the sides get browned and get grill marks. And then pull it off. They've already been oiled and seasoned. And if you desire, you can put any. I like Parmesan cheese on asparagus. That's how they used to do it with all asparagus in Italy. And that's just the way it is. But the Parmesan doesn't go on until you serve it. And there you go.
All right. And there you have it. There you have it.
The Copper River salmon. The steak, I made a maitre d' butter to put on the steak. And that has...
Yeah, what's in it?
Garlic. It's garlic, grated garlic, chopped parsley, black pepper, and grated lemon rind. And you let the butter get soft, and then you throw everything in, you mix it up thoroughly, and then you take a piece of saran wrap, and then you take your butter and you put it, cut it so you make like a tube, you know, just a long row, maybe 6-8 inches, 8-10 inches probably. We use 3 sticks of butter, a bunch of parsley, 2 grated garlic cloves, and some fresh cracked pepper, and then the grate, about half the rind of a lemon in the mixture. And you mix that up, then you roll it out, and then with a saran wrap, you roll it over, and you make it a tube. And you twist the ends, and then you roll it along, and you can, then you have something that looks like a tenderloin, but not as thick. You know, it might be 2 inches thick around, and you try and get it as round as you can. And you can do that. The butter's not going to be, it's not going to be hard. It'll be soft, so you can, it's very pliable. And then you put it in the freezer. And when you want to use some of this butter, like I will put a slab of about, oh, a couple of slabs on this steak while it's resting, about, a 1/2 inch thick each on that hot steak with the foil over it, and the butter will melt and go over it. But you, from the freezer, you cut off what you're going to use on your steak, and then you put it in the refrigerator the night before, and then just before you pull your steak off, you pull that butter out of the refrigerator and slice it up, and then place it on the steak and put the tent over it and let it melt over the steak. And then for the we've got a red pepper pesto with sweet red peppers that I think we're going to use on the scallops on tonight. And with the with the Copper River salmon, I'm just going to serve that with a lemon and lime wedge. Yeah, that's really good. And the skin's on. And I just cook it on the skin side down. That's all. But oil, olive oil rubbed on top, black pepper and salt. And my skillet will be dry. And then I'll throw that salmon in with the skin side down. So that gets real crispy, and you put a lid on the salmon so it cooks from the top without having to flip it. And there you go.
Sounds like a pretty cool weekend of eating, yes?
I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen my brother and sister in 5-6 years, each of them.
Wow. And they and when they see you, they yeah. think of food.
Yes, they do. And Beth and I have been working all week getting everything ready for this. We're very excited about it, to be honest with you. It should be lots of fun. It'll be a fast week, but it's going to be intense, and we'll have a good time.
I've got an email for you. The chef just mentioned butters and some kind of spread that he's going to put on that steak.
Yes.
Does he have a favorite? I'm a fan of a little bit of blue cheese, a little bit of butter, a little bit of garlic. Is there any concoction that he leans towards other than the one that he's going to serve his brother and sister this weekend?
Well, that's a great question. I think on the steak, I'm probably going to use the maitre d' butter, but I have also used a blue cheese. In the restaurant, I used gorgonzola, which is Italian blue cheese. And that makes an absolutely spectacular butter with the garlic. You can don't need any salt. There's plenty of salt in blue cheese or gorgonzola. So all you need maybe is a little black pepper. You can do a little lemon rind or something like that in there or not. But also I would add parsley, chopped up parsley, or you can use chopped up green onions. Goes real well with blue cheese. It's whatever, you know, you can use any cheese if you want, but I like the blue cheese or gorgonzola, whichever one of those you like. That makes absolutely probably as good a butter as the one I'm making.
But let me ask you, so what's the difference between regular blue cheese and gorgonzola?
Okay, well...
Because let me tell you what I don't like about blue cheese. I'm not a big blue cheese fan, as Kim knows. And the reason I'm not, it's just, I mean, with blue cheese... That is a powerful. That's like sour.
Pungent.
Yeah, that's
very
like
pungent.
Sauerkraut as it rolls through your nostrils and stuff. It's a strong taste, and if you don't like it, it puts you off. Now, I will say this: I like blue cheese dressing, but it's the overpowering taste of those chunks of blue cheese that I don't like. So, like when we have chicken wings, or if there's a salad with blue cheese dressing, I'll ask, "Does it have big chunks of blue cheese?" And they'll say, "Oh, yes," and I'll say, okay, no thank you, Jeff Thousand Islands. Right? So what's the difference between blue cheese and gorgonzola?
Well, there's blue cheese from England, France, Spain. They all have their own blue cheeses. Gorgonzola, to my liking, and why I liked it better, it's a little creamier. Then it's not as crumbly as a straight-up blue cheese. It's still funky smelling. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
And if you like that kind of stuff, then you'll love this. But it's not, each blue cheese has different intensity of pungence. if you use the blue cheese or gorgonzola in a butter, that also smooths it out. And, when you mix it up, you'll get the blue cheese or the gorgonzola cheese, mixed in with the butter. And when it melts, you'll still get that flavor, of the blue cheese, but it'll be tempered by the butter. And garlic, if you have garlic in there, or parsley, or green onions, however. So that's the difference. And that's why I like the gorgonzola. I like to make my wedge salad with gorgonzola because I found that to be, on a, wedge of head lettuce with your diced crispy bacon, your gorgonzola dressing with the sour cream and mayo and whatnot and, pepper. And, that to me is just divine. I love a wedge salad. Little, red onion on there.
So blue cheese is blue cheese. Gorgonzola, is it creamier? Because, you buy blue cheese in a block, right? Gorgonzola comes, it's a little, how does...
Well, no, all blue cheeses.
Right.
Or gorgonzola, they all come in wheels.
Right.
The real good stuff.
Right.
Okay. And it depends how long they've been aged.
Right.
But for my liking, it's a little, gorgonzola is a little creamier and not as crumbly as regular blue cheese. And you'll see in the grocery store, you'll see packets, little bags, cellophane bags of crumbled blue cheese. And that's what most people buy. In the restaurant, I would buy wheels of cheese.
Got it.
When I buy my wheel of Parmesan cheese, it weighed 70 pounds. And it cost about $600. Yeah. But it would, and I'd go through probably three and a half wheels of Parmesan cheese a year. It was from Parmesan Reggiano. It's from Parma, Italy. And so, you know me. I never skimped on the quality of what I ordered. And I tried to still keep it within range of being affordable.
Right.
And not too expensive. But, if I have to eat it and you're going to eat it, I want it to be great.
Okay. So the difference is the gorgonzola comes in the same wheel, but you said it's a little bit creamier?
Yeah, it is. It is. You cut into it and it has more of a golden color and blue too, but yeah. Yeah, and you have veins running through both cheeses. It's mold is what it is, but it's edible mold. and that's the difference.
Got it. All right, another email for you. Mac, I'm interested in doing fried chicken. Now, I don't know if you've ever talked about this. I don't recall ever hearing you speaking about fried chicken. Does the chef have a fried chicken recipe?
I don't, because I don't do a lot of fried chicken. Beth and I used to back in the day. Sometimes if you take fried chicken and you've got pieces of fried chicken, the leg, the thigh, the wings and breast, and you soak them in a buttermilk mixture overnight, and that buttermilk helps tenderize the chicken. Now, some people will just do a straight brine like we do for a turkey.
Right.
You know, salt and sugar.
Right.
Everybody now has their own brine recipe.
Right.
And then you take it out, you pat it dry, and a lot of people just like to dust it in a seasoned flour. It could be a mixture of regular flour and cornmeal, half and half, and you do it, dust it in that, then you put it in the fridge for about 20 minutes to let that breading harden on your chicken. You know, adhere to the chicken, not harden. It's the wrong word.
Better word.
But some people will do seasoned flour, then they drop it in an egg wash. That's probably half eggs and half milk or cream. It's your preference. And then you put it, then from that wash, you drop it in a mixture of either, you can use breadcrumbs. I've used crunched up corn flakes, you know, just take regular corn flakes, not flavored corn flakes, and you take it, the whole bag out of the box, and you just pound the hell out of it without breaking the plastic. And then what you do is you put it in a pan, and then after you take it out of that wash, then you put it in the breadcrumbs, you put it on the tray, you let it rest for a little bit to adhere, and then you drop it in your oil. Now the oil should be around 350 to 375 degrees. Any hotter than that, you're going to burn the outside and the inside of the thigh, and the chicken breast will be raw. So, you know, and the chicken breast takes the longest, the thigh, and then the leg and the wing last. So you know, you put your breasts in first and you get them going, and then you add, you know, the thigh and the leg and the wing. But everybody also has their own secret recipe or whatever. But for me, and it's a thicker crust if you do all three of those, flour, the wash, and the breadcrumbs. I kind of just like a flour, a very seasoned flour with a little bit of cayenne in there, black pepper, salt, and you put it in there and cover it real hard and then shake any excess off and then drop it in the fryer. And with the skin on, folks, don't be a pansy with this boneless, skinless stuff.
You know what? People don't even know what you're talking about when you say with the skin on anymore. What? What are you, a barbarian?
Yeah, what do you mean? What's that? What's skin?
What, yeah,
it's the heart of the artichoke, folks.
It's like the reason I used to eat my mother's chicken was to eat the skin.
Amen. Amen.
Right? I mean, Kathleen.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
Kathleen did hers with Rice Krispies, garlic, salt and pepper.
Yes.
Pretty simple. Dunk the chicken in butter, roll it around in the Rice Krispies, and then she put it in a piece of Pyrex pan, and then she'd salt, pepper, and garlic on it, and then I'm telling you, that was to die for, absolutely die for, and the best was, you know, the skin, I mean, held all the seasoning in it, and it had the Rice Krispies on it. That was why I ate it. It was awesome.
And folks, you don't have to use a big cast iron skillet. Well, the Southerners, that's how it started. Cooking your fried chicken and
they
cast
have to
iron.
Do it.
But if you're sensitive about all the oil, which is the best part. You can also put it on a raised rack in the oven at 350 and bake it. But the chicken has to be off the bottom of the pan on a raised rack. And so it gets crisp all the way around. It's just like cooking your turkey on a V-rack, you know. you don't want it sitting in fat and oil. But otherwise, me though, I like the fried chicken. I really do. But I have to be careful when I eat, how much fried chicken I eat, because you get started with fried chicken and you know, all of a sudden you've eaten half a chicken.
You know, it is, that is the
all
truth.
All four,
right?
Pieces, man.
That is the truth.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. But that's it.
Here's another email. Mac, could you ask the chef to explain Pyrex to me? Yeah, what is
Pyrex? It's a glass vessel that has high sides, and it's usually used for baking, but also it can be put on the stove and oil in there and things fried in it. But for me, I would not use Pyrex, even though Kathleen did. I'm a cast iron guy because the cast iron holds the heat.
To bake it?
No, not to bake it. You put it in the Pyrex.
Yeah, that's what she did. She baked it. She didn't fry it.
Oh, she baked it. Okay. Then that's what you do. And because it's glass, you know, it heats everything evenly. And it makes great casseroles, baking anything you want in there. Yeah. But, my mom used to use Pyrex, too.
And you go hot to cold, and Pyrex doesn't, you know, Pyrex can do that, right, unlike glass?
Yes, it can.
Yes, it can. It has a greater, elasticity than glass in terms of its own...
That's right. It doesn't shatter.
I just went scientific on you right there.
Yeah, you did. Very good. Professor.
Thank you. Very, very
Professor
much.
Professor Mack.
Is there anything better than Pyrex?
I don't know today. I'm sure there's some kind of vessel that you can... That's similar to Pyrex, maybe even better. I just don't know about it. I know Beth has some Pyrex baking dishes. Yes. And she got turned on to those by her mother. In fact, I think we still have a Pyrex baking dish from her mom.
From her mom.
Been around a long time.
Hello. Somebody asked me in an email during the week about breakfast. I said, "Well, that's Kim's favorite. That's Kim's favorite meal." Oh. And they said, "I'm a huge pancake lover. Could you ask him? Is there any secret that he would tell us about making great pancakes?"
Well, I would use in my mixture, my wet mixture, I would use buttermilk. With the flour, and it depends. Some people like buckwheat flour with their to make their pancakes. I just use regular flour, and you might put a little dash of vanilla in the batter, and you don't want it too smooth. You want it kind of lumpy when you mix it, because those little dry clumps, not big clumps, but, you know, you don't want to over mix a pancake batter. And then,
okay, you want the lumps out of it, but you don't want to over mix it. Explain how you do
that. Yeah, if there are, you know, you're mixing it and you're ready and there's still some little white lumps in there, as long as they're not the size of your thumb or anything, they're still okay. They will smooth out when you put the batter in the skillet or on the stovetop, whatever you're using to cook your pancakes. But you don't want it, you want to mix it, but you don't want to overmix it. I guess if you understand what I'm saying, it's just, you don't want it so smooth that there are no lumps in your pancake batter. There you go.
That's too smooth. So lumps aren't necessarily a bad thing. They should be small lumps.
Yeah, yeah. They'll smooth out and they'll make a more tender pancake. If you overbeat your batter, they'll tend to be a little chewier. And that's no good for pancakes. And one of my favorite, there's two things I love. I love blueberry pancakes. And I love banana pancakes. And then I like pecan pancakes. And you can do like banana pecan pancakes. Now, when you put your batter on the skillet, then you have your blueberries or whatever you're going to put inside, you just drop it right on top. And then when you get the bubbles around the edge and it starts to bubble up,
yep,
the batter,
yep,
that's when you flip it. Not before. You don't want it too runny when you flip it, but you don't want to overcook it because then you'll burn the bottom and you'll waste all those good, and you could use strawberries, blueberries, apples, diced up apples, bananas, whatever you want, fruit-wise. But those are my fave. So, yeah, and there you go. And lots of butter. And I discovered, I was with my brother-in-law, and we were at Perkins on Columbia Road across from the hospital. And he loves to have breakfast there. So I met him there one day for a breakfast with my wife and her brother. And John ordered this syrup, sugar-free syrup. I says, what is this?
Yeah, I know. That's going to taste like...
I want maple syrup.
Right, exactly.
But I looked at it. It had no sugar in there. And I thought, oh, my God, they must have sweetened it with stevia. I didn't look. It was made by Smucker's.
Oh, we love Smucker's.
And me being diabetic, I said, God, I can order pancakes now? And, yeah, so, but it was actually pretty good.
It was.
Yeah, it was. I was surprised. And it wasn't too runny. You know, like you go some places and their maple syrup, quote unquote, it looks like water. Comes out of the damn jug like water. I'm going, what is this?
Yeah, this cannot
be. It's brown sugar and water, heated, melted, and boiled, taken off the stove. No, I like maple syrup, man. But,
well, you know, the problem with a lot of these dishes is your mouth has an expectation, right? And so,
yes, it does.
When you get that watery kind of syrup, you put it in your mouth. Your mouth's like, this is garbage. We don't like. What are you doing to us? So
yeah. did you ruin my pancakes?
Yeah, how could you do this to us? So, anyway. All right, sir. Well, look, have a great weekend. Tell your brother and sister that we send our love and send our best. And thank you very much for doing this on a day that you're very busy. And have a great weekend. Tell Bob I said hello.
Okay. One other thing.
Sure.
I will say hi to Bob for you. Casey loves listening to your show.
Well, I'm glad.
And she'll tune in once in a while. She says, oh, he's funnier than shit. I says, oh, don't encourage him.
Yeah, don't. The last thing you need to do is say that to him.
Yeah, don't encourage him. But, yeah, she likes your show, and she likes our patios, you know, our back and forth and messing around. And it's fun. She loves the show.
Well, that's good.
So I just wanted to give you a shout-out.
Gets to listen to her big brother.
Yep, she does. That's how we get in touch, and we talk every week. Casey and I are probably we're close. Her oldest daughter is a goddaughter.
Oh,
another goddaughter.
Another goddaughter. Yeah, don't forget. Colleen's birthday this month. Turned 16.
I know. Sweet 16.
Sweet 16.
Oh, baby.
Exactly.
Never been kissed.
We've never been kissed. There you have it. As the line goes.
Love
all
that.
Right.
I, you know what? I want to be a fly on the wall when she's waiting for her first date. And
no, you really don't. You really don't want to be that fly, do you? No, you know, look, Colleen is
cute as hell. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, Colleen, she's fun.
She's got me,
she's a fun girl, and
yes,
she is. Yeah, she's a fun girl. She'll do all right. She'll do all right.
Oh,
so.
Great! All your kids are great.
All right. Well,
all right, bud.
Have fun with your family, Kim. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, Mac.
There you have it.
Have a great weekend.
There you go. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.